We are Rogue Media Sports.
Vanguard is working hard to balance opportunity and risk for investors in this time of volatile yields. We know financial advisors are working hard to do the same. Visit vanguard.com/fixed income today. Important information. All investing is subject to risk, including the possible loss of the money you invest. Bond funds are subject to the risk that an issuer will fail to make payments on time and that bond prices will decline because of rising interest rates or negative perceptions of an issuer's ability to make payments. Vanguard Marketing Corporation, distributor.
Hey, it's Mark Goodman.
And I'm Alan Light.
On today's podcast, Record Store Day founder Carrie Colleton is joining us to discuss the April 20th RSD special releases.
Plus, we'll talk live with our audience, the Sound Up Pod Squad, and find out who still listens to vinyl. And some updates from the Beatles universe.
Oh, good. Sound Up with Mark Goodman and Alan Light, the only music podcast that matters. Get it on Pandora, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is the Doomsday Podcast, special post-draft edition. Ed Werder, Matt Mosley, Frito Nation Productions. And Ed, you and I had the opportunity to attend rookie minicamp today. And there's not, you know, Ed, there was never a time when rookie minicamp you could see just a ton. But I would say now it's even less than ever, okay?
If that it wasn't enough to get Mike McCarthy out there. He decided to have back surgery and miss the start of rookie minicamp. So, I mean, I think we put forth more effort than the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys.
Well, let's give – hopefully Mike's fine. We send our wishes to him as – and we don't know exactly the extent of it, but hope he's back soon. He can be part of OTA.
Dan Quinn seemed comfortable, though, leading the troops in his absence today. He and Jerry made the introductions to the rookies, called them all up before practice, and Jerry addressed them, then Dan Quinn addressed them, and Dan seemed very comfortable in that role, much as he did when he replaced McCarthy in that Thursday night game at New Orleans, which the Cowboys won during the pandemic that Mike missed. So Mike needs to be careful not to get Wally pipped here.
You're going to cause Mike to come limping back now, like a little too soon from this thing. But it was an interesting scene out there. We got to see the rookies in person. We'll have some of our takes on what we saw. I love seeing Deuce Vaughn.
I thought Deuce Vaughn was shorter than most, and I thought Mozzie Smith was wider than most, is what I saw.
Yeah. I saw it when you saw Mozzie early today.
I don't really want
to get into that.
Say it.
Ed Werder today may have said hi to Mozzie, and it ended up being Sharif Floyd, one of the Cowboys' assistant coaches.
He was a few decades older.
Kind of a wide body. No, Sharif's probably only about 10 years older, but a big defensive tackle-looking dude.
Well, the funny thing about Sharif is now he's on the coaching staff to coach defensive tackles, and you might remember in the draft not so long ago, whenever he began his career, the Cowboys were interested in him. He was the highest-graded remaining player in the first round on their board, and they didn't draft him because Rod Marinelli didn't want that type of defensive tackle. But this year, they do draft a defensive tackle for the first time since Russell Maryland in the first round. Mozzie Smith. But you're right, I did mistake Mozzie. And it was Will. We were sitting down with Will in the cafeteria. Uh-huh. And as Sharif Floyd walks by, and I said, "Hey, Mozzie," because it looked just like the guy I'd just seen a few minutes before. And then Will goes, "Oh, that was Sharif Floyd."
he was kind to you and let you know. And I was kind of hoping that Sharif did not hear, but you think he did.
I think they always hear those slights. Right. Yeah, everything you say that you don't want players to hear, they always hear it.
All right. It is. It was quite a way to start our interview. We did have thanks to Ed, a major one-on-one exclusive or two-on-one interview today. And we'll get to that in a second.
It was mostly just me and him, so I could see why you think it was just a one on one.
No, stop it.
One and a half.
No, it was one and a half and one. It was a full Mosley. Frito, please play the music. All right, Doomsday Podcast. Ed and I did have an opportunity to sit down with Will McClay, who is officially the vice president of player personnel for the Cowboys. Ed, go ahead, and since you set this up, why don't you set up this interview?
Well, I think we wanted to talk to him because, you know, the Cowboys have had an interesting offseason in terms of personnel. You know, they made a couple of trades to acquire Brandon Cooks, a wide receiver from the Texans, and Stephon Gilmore, a cornerback from the Indianapolis Colts, two key veterans that fill, you know, really positions of need and allowed the Cowboys to go into the draft and theoretically take the best player on the board, which they've done very well recently. Their drafts have been very successful. In fact, I saw a statistic that over the course of the last 5 years, the Cowboys have played more Cowboys rookies have played more snaps than any other team has played rookies in the NFL. And I think last year they finished sixth. Kansas City, which won the Super Bowl, played the most rookies last year in terms of games and snaps played. So, and Mike McCarthy will always tell you that he learned in Green Bay from Ted Thompson that you have to play rookies because the Packers didn't really participate in unrestricted free agency. And so McCarthy is used to playing rookies. And we've seen what Dan Quinn has done with a rookie named Micah Parsons. So these guys are probably going to have a big impact on the draft. And I thought it was a great opportunity to sit down with the guy who, you know, gathers all of the information. And ultimately, I think we mentioned this to Will, and he talks about the fact that before they took Mozzie Smith, they were debating two players in the draft room. And Jerry said to Will McClay, so tell us about this guy. Mm-hmm. And once he described how he valued and graded Mozzie Smith, the Cowboys drafted him. And you know, Jerry doesn't, he said before the draft, he doesn't like Will McClay to get any attention because he's always afraid somebody in the league is going to hire Will McClay away as a general manager. And somebody said in that press conference, well, why don't you make him your general manager? And Jerry quickly said, we already have a general manager. And that would be Jerry, of course. And Will talks about that. So, I thought Will was great. And, let's hear what he had to say about the way they went about evaluating Mozzie Smith and Luke Schoonmaker and how they saw the tight end position and the great story of the draft. Yeah. I think you asked him about Deuce Vaughn becoming a Cowboy.
And without further ado, here is our interview with Will McClay.
So, Will, you're responsible for collecting most of the information for the organization on these rookies, and now you come out here in this rookie minicamp and see them on the field for the first time. What are you looking for when you see them in your organization on your fields for the first time? What are you trying to accomplish?
I mean, the important thing is we know they can play football. Now we got to figure out if they play at the level that we need them to. And, you know, it's really, this part is the mental part. It's, you know, all the things that we give them to prepare, you know, coming in with the coaches, tell them in the first meeting, can they take it from the first meeting to the second meeting to the walkthrough? It's all a chain of progression.
And to get out here, I mean, it has to be a fun weekend when you put that many hours for the whole scouting department. Like, what does it mean when you finally get to see them on the field? I mean, it has to be kind of a neat moment.
Yeah, it is. That's what we were talking about, you know, because it's changed, you know, 3-4 years ago, whatever the time frame was when we would have these practices out here and got, you know, we'd have multiple guys out, we'd have multiple trout guys. You see them practicing and playing football, it's more intense. This is a little bit different because we get to go out and just kind of watch them move around, you know, so it's a little bit different. We still got to wait to see, you know, what's under the hood. But to know that they're ours and to get them out on the field and to see our coaches coaching, that's the positive part.
The emphasis, seemingly, despite the fact that Mike's an offensive coach, the emphasis seems to be on adding size, being a more physical team, being able to run the football when you want to, and controlling the run on defense. How much of that is accurate, and have you achieved that objective or added to that?
I think we've added to it. We've got to continue to add pieces to it because that's the type of team that we're trying to build. But, you know, I think adding more size, more athletes gives you an opportunity to be flexible in whatever you do. You know, and that's kind of the goal there is to continue to build a strong team, have strong depth. And how do you do that? You got strong athletic players, you know, as you continue to bring them in.
I assume in investing a first-round pick on Mozzie Smith, a defensive tackle, that you envision him being more than just a two-down run-stopping player.
Yeah, he's going to be more than a two-down run-stopping player. You know, we feel like that, but then his main job is his main job, and he's got to be very, very good, elite at that. And that's why we took him in the first round, and he's got to get to that point, but he's got to be very, very good at what we drafted him for, and the other things are going to improve, and we have a strong feeling that they will.
How do you take us through that process of how do you project a guy that was a great run stopper, that was a huge part of what he did, and he's been talking about how he's going to have a plan with Dan for the pass rushing plan. How do you kind of project that when all his stats and everything show unbelievable run stopper, but you see, obviously, a guy that you think is going to be pretty disruptive as a pass rusher?
Yeah, I mean, your key phrase you used there was projecting. Where anybody going from college to pro, you're projecting. You know, we're projecting how good they're going to be, what position they're going to play. But in terms of looking at improving pass rush, there's enough snaps on tape that showed that he could get to an edge and he could win. There was some things that showed that he's got a ton of ability to be able to get to an edge and win an edge. And people do it differently. Some people do it with speed. Some people do it with bend. Some people do it with power. How does he use his skill set to do that job of rushing the passer? That's getting with the coaches and developing that, but there's a plan for it. When you watch the tape, you know, there's different schemes. Guys play with their feet parallel, so they're readers. To rush the passer, you have to trigger your feet. You have to know you're going to an edge and not play a whole man. So it's going to take reps, but I think that he's football smart enough and we do a good enough job to be able to improve that.
And when Dan Quinn says he can see this guy being a pass rusher, you tend to believe that
yes,
he can develop him into one of those kinds of players?
Yeah, I mean, just the way that our whole staff works and in their plan and their program for getting the best out of guys. They understand. I mean, you know, they do a unique thing with players when they come in is they ask them what their weakness is, okay? What's your weakness? All right, you tell me it's a weakness now. Are you willing to work on that? Yes, okay, well, here's the plan. So there's a plan to improve those things, too.
That's during the 30 visits?
Mm-hmm.
Or, yeah, scouting
yep.
process?
Yep.
After you made that move and addressed that issue on defense, we went into this draft thinking it was real deep for tight ends. People mm-hmm. were saying it was historically good, mm-hmm. rich draft for tight ends. Did the run on tight ends at the top of the second round catch you guys by surprise, or how did you deal with the fallout of that?
It didn't catch us by surprise. When you put your board together, you put your board together based on the players and how you value them and who we thought was best, and, you know, going down that way. But then when you look at the tight ends, there was depth at that position. So knowing that there's going to be runs in the draft, there's always runs on positions. You got to be prepared for that. You got to be prepared that if you don't get one, what are you going to do? I think that we went through free agency, fill in some holes so that we could draft pure and make sure that we were doing things the right way. You don't want to force anything, but you pay attention to it. Because when you go in the draft, people talk about best player available, mm-hmm. position need. It's a combination of the two. The market every year is different. You know, we go to Whole Foods, sometimes they don't have any apples, so you got to eat bananas. So that's kind of the way that you look at it, because it's a different environment every time you go in the draft.
And
by the way, I appreciate you. We're trying to land Whole Foods.
There you go. Okay.
What about Luke Schoonmaker fits well with what you're looking to do at the tight end position?
Well, he played in the Big Ten, physical brand of football. They block. He understands that. So many offenses and things now, you got these extended receivers that don't do what you want them to do in the NFL. He's done that. He's played in a system where they require it out of him. He's done it at a good level. He's done it, and he's got the physical skill set to continue to grow too, his athletic testing, all those deals, as well as the tape, show there's a guy with upside that, you know, was a little different than the other ones because, you know, each one had their own little specialty deal. He was a well-rounded guy.
Is Mike, now that Mike's back to calling plays, was his influence, I'm sure it was, you know, similar, but did it feel any different? Because obviously he's been away from this for a few years. He's back to it. He seems to be very excited about it. Did that influence anything in your visits and the build-up to the draft?
No. I think, you know, the one thing about being the head coach is that you've got to see it all, and that's what Mike does is kind of look at the – even though he's calling plays, he realizes that if you go defense and you pick a defensive player, well, that's going to help my offense. We're going to get the ball back, those things. So he's been very transparent about wanting to get good football players, and we'll adjust our scheme and who we are based on the players that we have.
You mentioned that you felt like you were able to go into this draft and be open-minded and flexible and follow your board in terms of how you had guys ranked. How much of that was a product of making the trade for Brandon Cooks at wide receiver, not getting forced into a move there, or you know, getting Stephon Gilmore at corner and not having to address that position early in the draft.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's part of it. That's why there's free agency. That's why there's draft picks and compensatory. And it's how do you use, you know, the funds that you have to be able to improve your team. And I think we address some of those things using the, you know, the compensatory picks for Cooks and for Gilmore. And then we felt like we'd cover that up. And so it gives you the ability to say, I don't have all of these holes I have to fill, and which might make you want to place more value on one thing or the other. No, let's keep it as pure as we possibly can. And I think that that process helped.
It was interesting to me because Cooks was a guy you pursued in a trade at the deadline last year, and it didn't happen. And despite there now being many more options to get a wide receiver, you still chose to get him. What it is about him that the organization found so intriguing?
Well, number one, the production that he's had consistently throughout his career. That's number one. Number two, you know, people you talk to around the league and everything about him being a professional. And you know, we had Carlos Watkins was here. Prince had coached him, and they talked about not only his ability, but kind of his leadership quality. So when you have a team that's trying to get to the point where we're trying to get to, you have a good locker room, you got a great leader in Dak Prescott, he needs support. Well, here comes a guy that, you know, from everything that I've heard, from all the guys doing the, you know, the voluntary sessions and everything, not only how fast he is, that's the first thing that's out of their mouth, but how good of a leader he is to the young guys and teaching them and telling them and, you know, helping them understand this game. Well, so now you add that piece, juice, you know, making the young guys better. We stayed with him because we just felt like that was one of the things that you needed to add to the team, and he's just been so accomplished, you know.
What's the biggest change you've made over the years? You've been on a really good run with a lot of your draft picks. You know, I'm just wondering, as you have grown into this and done it more and more, is there anything you're doing that much differently now than you were 5-6 years ago?
No, I think I've continued to learn how to apply the, you know, what the coaches want compared to what the scouts see, compared to what we need, you know, collectively as a team, kind of talking about that. But I think the most important thing that I've done over the past 5 years is the staff has continued to grow into our process. So I've been doing this for 10 years, I think, and we kind of changed our system and the way we did things, and kind of some of the marks that we want to hit, now everybody buys into that. So now our process is cleaner. You know, it's from how we watch tape to how we grade players to how we present the players, how we dig up the information. And those scouts have a great responsibility. They're the first ones to go out and see them and do it. So the belief in those guys gives me belief in the system and in the belief to be able to say, this is why we do it. This is how we do it this way. And then the results come, and then everybody sees the results. It's not, you know, anything that I'm doing, but it's like the collective group as we put it together, and then working with the coaches as well. It's a unique deal, is working with the coaches. The coaches going out, the guys we assign them doing the work that the way that we do it. It might be different than their other places, but they jump into it and they buy into it. And so I think continuing to work on it's a player for us, not a player that I pick, not a player that, you know, a coach picks, but the process does. So continuing to improve that process. That's the thing that I think that I've learned over the years, continue to hone in on the details, believe in something. We believe in the way we're doing it. So let's refine it and keep doing it, you know, and keep getting better at it.
Do you still love getting out on the road and seeing people with your own eyes?
Oh,
obviously,
yeah.
You trust your scouts, but how much do you enjoy that part of it?
I enjoy that part of it because it's fresh. Typically, the way that I go out, because like I'm here all year during the year, I might go catch a game or two during the season, but I know our team, I know what's going on, and I try and hit this tape or you know, the All-Star games with a fresh eye without looking and hearing what they say and formulate my own opinion. But I do like to get out on the grass and see it, and especially like to go to pro days because you can kind of get the feel of the competitiveness of a kid and the atmosphere that he's from. And, you know, all of those things matter when you're bringing them into a different environment. It's like understanding what they come from, then you got to know what you're putting them into.
How has your influence in the organization grown? I mean, we saw the video. You guys were in the draft room in the first round debating two different players, Mozzie being one of them, and it almost seemed like once you made your case to Jerry, you were the last voice to speak before that choice was made, and you carried the day. How you viewed Mozzie really weighed on Jerry and convinced him, this is our guy.
Well,
how has your influence grown over the years with Jerry?
I think hopefully it's continued to build trust in what we've done because we have a process. They believe in it. We've had success. And then, you know, with them asking me my input on these, you know, on these players and in that situation, I think it's positive because I hope that they know that I do the work and how important it is to me. And I'm going to give an opinion. And everybody in that room as we go through it has an opinion. I try and collect all of it and put it all together and say, based off of everything we talked about, here's the evidence as to why. You know, and that's kind of the way that I look at it. So I am very happy with the way that things have progressed and why I'm still here is the fact that there is input, not only my input, but the value of input from everybody. Me being kind of the controller of it, that there's a great sense of responsibility with that, too. I don't want to, you know, screw up anything because I might not see it the way that you do. Well, let's collectively look at it and try and figure it out. And I think that's the best way to kind of describe what we do and my influence in it is I'm always trying to be as best I can, unbiased, and let's get all the facts. And then at some point in time, I got to say what I like.
You mentioned you're still here.
Mm-hmm.
You've had chances to leave, to be a general manager somewhere else. Why are you still here? Do you value those opportunities? Is that something you still aspire to have?
I mean, what I aspire to do is a part of something that holds up a trophy and being the best in the business as many times as I possibly can. Is that here, wherever it is, but I feel like it's here because of the unique way and situation that we're in now. Everybody's got a title. Everybody reports to the owner. Our owner just got owner GM. Titles don't mean anything to me. So it's the group, it's the effort, it's the opportunity that's most important to me. Like having a title next to your name, there's a lot of responsibility that comes with that too. I like watching tape. I like being able just to do football. I love visiting with the coaches and the trainers and doing all that stuff. You know, it's the other things of the GM job that I might not want to do. But, you know, the key is being here and being, you know, having an opportunity to do it because of just like the scene in the draft room when we drafted Deuce. It's about family. My kid's out here now. Why do we do this? I spend so much time away from family and doing things that, you know, when you're around a group that you know that they know you and you can argue with and it's like that family atmosphere, there's sometimes paychecks that, you know, can't equate to some of those things.
Does your son ever help you break down any film?
Yeah, he'll watch it with me. But, you know, this is a new generation. If I had it on my phone and I was watching TikTok and I was watching, like, 12-second snippets, he would watch it all the time. It's sitting there and running back plays over and over and over again. He gets bored and he leaves. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's the unique part about it, too, for me, is, again, my son grew up in this. And, you know, him being there in the draft when we drafted Deuce. And you see that father-son relationship at a different level grow. Like, he's out here today, and he's watching. So to see his maturation through this process and being allowed to do it in this environment is one of the coolest things ever.
Well, speaking of coolest things ever, the Deuce Vaughn drafting him with his father being one of your employees, what was your take? What was that moment like for you as a guy who's lived that same life?
Oh, it was probably one of the coolest moments of my life I've ever had with all the different things that have happened and I've been very fortunate to achieve or see and do. That was one because it was, okay, it was the father-son deal, but then the reaction of everybody knowing Chris is a guy and everybody that's watched his son, his reactions, like everybody was happy for that moment, not only for them, but for us. And so that was just like one of the best things I've ever been around.
And he said it best. He's like, I don't want just to be a nice story, though.
Yes.
Like, y'all didn't do this to create. It was a neat moment.
Yeah.
Anybody who's ever seen him play, he has a huge impact.
That's the number one thing is we drafted a really good football player that can help our team. And the side story was his dad worked for the team. And when we talked about it, when Chris wasn't in the room, and it was Jerry, myself, Steven, and, you know, we talked about all the things that the guy could do. And, you know, the greatest thing was Jerry was like, you know, that's the guy to pick because that's the best thing for us. It wasn't anything other than his ability that made us pick him. So that was
you would have picked him no matter who Sonny was.
Right, no matter who Sonny was. You go, we're going down through that whole deal, and so you're looking at it and you're going, wow, okay, what's available, what's there, what's you know, all of his accomplishments and what he's done, and not only in college, but you look back to high school and all the things he's done. And when you add that element, if he can help us in the way that he is, that just adds more stuff to your locker room, to your team, to your chemistry, all that stuff too.
It's kind of cool that he has that relationship with Sproles. I mean, everybody thinks of that, but I mean, the K-State connection, they have like a friendship.
He texts him all the time, every day.
Yeah.
I mean, that has to help when there's somebody out there, kind of your same stature, that's done it.
Yeah, that's done it. I mean, you know, and that just talks about his intelligence to reach out to somebody that, you know, could relate to him. And not everybody can understand what he's going through. There's, you know, plenty of times where he's been told he's not big enough, you know, all that stuff. Well, here's another guy that made it and did it, and for him to draw some mentorship from that guy, it's really cool, you know. And, you know, we talked about the draft, and one of the things that stuck to me is, like, we were talking about quarterbacks. Okay, the number one pick in the draft is not your prototypical NFL player, but the game has changed. The way that the game is played has changed, and the players that execute their assignments have changed a little bit. So you have to open your eyes to that, and then you got to use them that way. But, I mean, football players come from everywhere, all sizes, all shapes, all colors, and if they can do the job, they can do the job.
And is Sproles the comp for him?
I would say, you know, there's a Sproles comp. I would say the Boston Scott kid that was at Philly, Tariq Cohen. You know, so there's some guys that are comparable, but his skill set is a little different than those guys. So he adds a different element. I mean, he gets football matchups, those sort of things, and still be able to do what you do offensively. He's just not 5'10".
He looks strong. Oh, like, yeah. He just looked like he put together. How many times? Do you remember how many times he did 225?
I don't remember off the top of my head.
Had to be.
I don't remember off the top of my head, but a unique deal about him.
Whoa.
A unique deal about him is like his hands are 9'3". He's 5'5". His hands are 9'3". Right? We got guys that are 6'5". I got a 6'5".
Quarterbacks with smaller hands than that.
Yeah, there's quarterbacks. There's offensive linemen with smaller hands than him. So, you know, he'll find a way to get it done. He'll give it everything. I know that.
You're talking about Chris and Deuce and family and all that. Part of the reason you're here and inspired to try to win a championship with the Cowboys before you take your next opportunity, if you ever do, is because wasn't this your dad's team?
No, it was funny. It wasn't my dad's team. Like, I grew up in Houston. So growing up in Houston, we hated the Cowboys because some of our games way, way, way back in the day, you didn't get to see because they put the Cowboys on. And so my dad...
You didn't get to see the Oilers?
Yeah, my dad used to always hate that. And then, you know, but it's, again, going back to that family deal, it's like when I got the job, he's like, hey, whatever, I like the Cowboys, fine. But he came out to camp when he was battling the cancer deal again, and the way that they accepted him and treated him and the whole deal, that's the family stuff that I'm talking about. It's when I was coaching the arena team, Charlotte's kids, and Shibo's working in scouting now, that's, you know, that's all the stuff that I'm familiar with and that matters to me most is when we go through and we do all this stuff, what's it for? We're trying to win, but it's the relationships and the people and everything that you go through.
It must have been nice, though, to hear what Jerry said about how much he thinks this is the best front office team he's had in his 30-plus years of owning the franchise, and then demonstrating that by, okay, Will, what do you think of these two players in the first round, and then going with what you say?
Yeah, I think that's cool and unique, and, you know, those are all moments in time that make you go, yeah, this is worth it. But, it you know, the best front office, we got to win the damn championship to be considered the best front office. That's the way I feel, and that's what I'm driven by, is like having the best process with the best group of scouts that help find the best players to make us the best team. You
like how much Ed has studied the draft room camera to be able to pick up on
these things. He might be. Are you, like, we kick the desk every now and then to find out if anybody's up under getting information. It might be Ed.
Well, I can't watch TikTok, so I guess.
Yeah.
Even though Ed was covering the Texans draft. He was like studying.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
Oh, you're going back up? Okay.
Are you pretty good on this?
Well, I wanted to, because we have a huge, you know, Longhorns audience as mm-hmm. well. Overshown is somebody, Big 12 people, really know well, explosive player.
Yeah.
I think people projecting him in NFL is like, okay, what's he going to be right away? What's he eventually going to be? How do y'all kind of see him? Obviously, special teams, it seems like, would be a great entry point for him.
Yeah.
But where is this thing headed with him?
I mean, you know, you're looking for, as the game continues to change, and you got to have guys that can cover people, that love to hit people, that play really fast, and that have instincts on top of it. He's got football instincts. He's got to learn. You know, he moved down from safety to linebacker, plays with speed and passing and all that. And, hell, they even asked him to rush the pass for some in Texas, or he said that he was going to do it, and he proved that he could do that. So I think the big thing for him is come in and make an immediate impact on special teams, learn his role, but he's going to be a guy that can play sideline to sideline and make plays for us in the run and pass game.
Between now and camp, what do you still need? People say a running back, a left guard. What do you see as any remaining holes on this team?
We need to continue to improve the team in whatever way we possibly can. There's, you know, you got to make sure you have depth, continue to have depth, because, you know, after one injury could happen and you're back at the starting block. So we want to have depth. But in you know, wherever we see that there's a hole, as we continue to go through this, we're going to look to improve it. You know, there's going to be opportunities to do that, and we need to be able, if it's the right fit, be able to handle it at whatever position that we do.
You know, your biggest fans are going to love hearing this interview, except they hate any time the microphone's in front of you or the spotlight's on you, because they're always afraid somebody's going to steal you away. People in the league are don't otherwise know how valuable you are to the Cowboys franchise.
Well, hey, I appreciate that, and I don't, you know what?
You're not an attention seeker.
Yeah.
I think what Ed's saying is, now that you again, been on the Doomsday podcast.
Yeah, that's it.
You're like,
I know,
really.
I know. Yeah.
It's about to change.
I know. Yeah. I'm going to put it on my social media account so I can get more hits.
And maybe then get your son will like,
oh, yeah, then maybe my son.
Podcasting.
Yeah, my son will say, yeah, you know what? You talked too long. I just turned it off. I want to do something else.
Thanks,
Ash.
See you out here.
Yep. Appreciate you. Yeah, good to see you.
All right, Ed. Really interesting stuff from Will on a lot of fronts. And we kind of jokingly talked about it, but about your ability to monitor closely the draft camera and kind of see what Will's doing. But as you talked about, Jerry does seem to be deferring to Will McClay. I think the trust has grown. And I think one of the more interesting parts of this interview was kind of hearing about his growth within the Cowboys organization and just kind of where he sees things these days. And then, Ed, this idea of being able to, quote, draft pure is something that kept coming up. And I think that's one of the things Will McClay and the scouting staff and the entire organization, one of the reasons Jerry's excited about this group is because they didn't feel cornered. They didn't feel like they had to go for a certain position. I think this was a pretty pure draft, at least in their estimation.
You know, I mean, I've seen, we all know people in the media grade drafts, you know, right away, which is kind of preposterous and not at all accurate. But for the most part, I've seen the Cowboys get relatively low grades. And I think an argument could be made that they prioritize need in this draft. I mean, they've denied that perception. I think it's interesting that they have felt, when people have asked about the quality of their draft, they felt compelled to say, well, we think that Brandon Cooks and Stephon Gilmore and even Jonathan Hankins have to be included as part of this draft class because we used draft collateral, yes, to acquire those players. So whether you think that's right or wrong, it's interesting that they are advocating that those players be included.
I like that. So basically they're saying you're weighing our draft class too heavily.
Right. Right.
That's the whole thing about draft grades, by the way.
But I mean,
you're really only looking at the players they took.
And they did need a defensive tackle. And like, I thought it was interesting that, you know, Will McClay said, as Dan Quinn, the defensive coordinator, suggested, they see Mozzie Smith as more than just a two down, you know, run player in the middle of their defense. But that is going to be an important part of the contribution that they expect from him. But I think when Dan Quinn says, hey, this guy has some ability as to rush the passer, then I think you tend to give him the benefit of the doubt on that. And I think based on how well the Cowboys have drafted in recent years, as Will McClay has gained influence in the draft room and within the organization on personnel, I think you have to give him the benefit of the doubt. And if he feels good about the players they picked, then great. Now, a lot of people will say, you know, hey, the Eagles had a far better draft. The Eagles had the best draft in football, and they're coming off a Super Bowl, a division championship, and a Super Bowl appearance. But I would say that, you know, Howie Roseman, before you give him executive of the year, let's just see how this whole thing plays out. I mean, Jalen Carter, you know, was drafted in the first round by them, and he was a, you know, probably had the highest draft grades of any player in the draft. But there were three teams that needed a defensive tackle picking in front of the Eagles who didn't take Jalen Carter. And I know one of those teams told me they viewed him as a generational type of player, like an Aaron Donald type of player in the middle of a defense, but given questions about his off the field. And now he's been, you know, sued as part of that fatal accident in Georgia that he was street racing during. A lot of people question his love of the game. And if there's one position where you better love the game, it's defensive tackle, because it's a thankless job in there where you're getting hit from all directions on every play. But I think a lot of it remains to be seen, but it's interesting to me that, you know, even though Mike McCarthy's been here, the Cowboys continue to fortify their defense in the draft. You know, two of their three first round picks since Quinn's been here have been defensive players, as was Mozzie Smith in this draft. They've drafted 28 players since Quinn was hired. 17 are defensive players. 11 of the picks they've made inside the top 10, 8 of those players have been defensive players. So it's interesting to me how Mike McCarthy, who continues to say, you know, he sees everything and wants to build an organization through the eyes of the quarterback, and it's all about making the quarterback successful, really seems to value, you know, being physically dominant on the offensive line and up front on defense, and values being stronger on the defensive side of the ball than on offense.
Yes. And in fact, Ed, soon they'll have a close to $50 million a year quarterback. And as you said, they want to run the ball like crazy, and they want to play defense. And that's where a lot of the strategy seems to be going. And that's a little bit of an odd approach for a play caller and head coach who's never done that in the past, who has always had the benefit for a long time of a Hall of Fame caliber quarterback in Aaron Rodgers, a first ballot guy for sure. And now, while they have this huge, highly paid quarterback that they love, I'm not saying they don't love him, but they're kind of, in one hand they say that, in one hand it's almost like they're kind of playing around him a little bit.
But when they tell you what they really think of the player is how they handle his negotiations, how do they pay him? They franchise tagged Dak Prescott twice to make sure he was their quarterback. They're paying him $40 million a year. They're willing already to extend him and pay him even more. But you're right in the observation being that McCarthy sees the strength of his team being on defense and wanting to do something he's never done in Green Bay, which is have a balanced attack and emphasis on running the football. This is the way that the Cowboys won with Jimmy Johnson, right? The whole thing that Jimmy Johnson did was, you know, built a defense, front seven on defense, especially front four, depth on the defensive line, rush the passer, run the football with Emmitt Smith. That's what they're recreating here. That's the way Jerry Jones won. It's never been the way Mike McCarthy's won.
Yeah, fascinating to think about. And Mike McCarthy, who was not out there with us today because of that back procedure. And Ed, we did dig in as the reporters that we are and ask who did the surgery, what part of the back was it, almost like a player, what's the timetable for Mike McCarthy's return? I would just say, Ed, what do you call this now? Just kind of like, I don't even know if we can say day-to-day, kind of like just, we just don't have a definition right now for it, right? He's just, Mike will be back when Mike wants to be back.
Whenever Jerry clears him to return to the football. It was funny that, you know, he always talks about Brett Brown, the director of rehabilitation. He's, and Mike is effusive in praising Brett Brown and Jim Maurer, the head trainer out there, and talking about how what a great job they do in bringing players back through injuries, you know, rehabbing ACL injuries and getting players back on the field at the right times. You know, Mike thinks there's an incredible amount of value in what Brett Brown does. And so we asked Brett Brown today, when will Mike be on the cords? You know, the rehab cords.
Resistance
cords. Yeah. When will Mike be on those? He said, Mike wouldn't even make it through warmups. So I don't think he's going to be involved in a specific program like that. But no, we're just kidding about Mike. And obviously we hope he gets well quickly and returns to his nice cushy chair upstairs in the front office.
Yeah, yeah. We want Mike back and doing his thing. Doomsday Podcast, also since we last visited with you, the schedule release has happened. Ed, you have taken a look at this. I liked earlier today, in fact, Ed and I were having lunch, and some gentlemen recognized the Doomsday Podcast, as happens to us a lot, maybe just Ed, but and wanted to immediately, Ed, it was no hello, how are you guys doing? It was just like, what y'all think of that schedule? And so there's a lot of schedule thoughts. Ed immediately threw out some things. I thought that was good, Ed. You knew about the Giants. You knew about these other teams. First of all, Cowboys schedule. Now that you've had a chance to kind of look, mainly you're looking at this thing for what it means for your travel, what it means for you
which
personally.
Which Marriott do I need to book and when?
But overall, how do you think the Cowboys came out on how this thing unfolds? Tons of primetime games, as always. Two Monday night games.
Yeah, they got the max, as usual. I think, there were six teams that got the maximum number of primetime games. Of course, the Cowboys are one of them.
Barely any noon games. I think two noon games, maybe.
And, I think it's a reasonably fair schedule. I think the other teams in the NFC East have it tougher. I think the end of the season is going to be a real challenge for the Cowboys. They have back-to-back games at Buffalo and Miami that could be challenging. But their opponents had a .549 winning percentage. Only Philadelphia, Miami, and New England have teams with a higher winning percentage. But only five of the Cowboys' 17 games come against teams with a losing season last year. And this is the seventh time in 12 years they open against the Giants, and Dak Prescott's won, 10 straight games against the Giants. So the Cowboys are 1-0 going into the week 2 home opener against Aaron Rodgers and the Jets, it appears.
Yeah.
But as to the other teams in the division, Philadelphia, defending NFC champions, they have 9 teams on their schedule that made the playoffs last year. The Chiefs, 49ers, Cowboys, Giants, Bills, Dolphins, Vikings, Seahawks, and Buccaneers. No defending conference champion since 1970 has ever had to play 9 different teams that made the playoffs the year before. So the Eagles are going to be challenged in a very unique way. And the Giants, we're not even going to talk about Washington. They're still celebrating that Dan Snyder is selling the organization. And we don't
that's
need...
That's how they're selling season
that's
tickets.
How they're selling their tickets this year. The Giants are the fourth team since 1990 to have 7 road trips in their first 11 games. The 2000 Ravens, the 2001 Ravens, and the 2021 Packers all faced the same challenge. And the good news for the Giants is all 3 of those teams made the playoffs. But the Giants have 5 back-to-back road games this year. No other team has more than 3 sets of back-to-back games. The Giants have 5. That's the schedule.
I like that.
Schedule notes.
Yeah, schedule notes. Ed made those notes. I like that. And I wonder if... the Giants have lodged any complaints. I guess there's probably a private way you can grouse about the schedule. These schedules always, we kind of think we know when they're going to come out. They're starting to land. Part of the deal is, okay, where are these international games? And no Mexico games this year. I believe they're working on the stadium. Is it
correct?
Stadium Azteca?
Yes.
So that'll come back the following year. I think on the European games or overseas, you've got several Londons.
Germany.
And you got a Frankfurt. Got a couple of Frankfurt. I could see you and I really enjoying a good Frankfurt game. But anyway, I have done shows from over in Europe. at times, you know. I think I spent Thanksgiving in Paris one time.
Oh, well, you've done this show.
Doing, yes.
Yeah, you were on vacation somewhere in the middle of the Cowboy season, and they're driving for the playoffs, and we're coordinating with doing the Doomsday podcast, so you get out of your room at 3 o'clock in the morning, leave the family in the dark, their safety in question, and go down and get a cup of coffee and sit in the lobby of the Louis Vuitton Hotel or whatever it is.
I was going to say, not only safety was King a big Louis. Issue, safety. So we were doing just fine, as I recall. But yeah, the Louis Vuitton store left a mark for sure. All right, Ed, any parting shots? I would say parting the shots. Players I saw today, I saw the what's her man's name, Maisie?
Mozzie.
Why do you call him Mozzie? Is it Maisie or Mozzie?
I thought it was Mozzie.
Okay, I'm going to go with Mozzie.
I thought it was Sharif. He was Sharif Floyd, too, so what the hell do I know?
No, I just kind of enjoyed looking out there. DeMarvian Overshown's going to be a player that fans are excited about, not only because he played at University of Texas. We talked to Will about it. Very explosive player. They're going to need him to get a little bigger, but he's a new – what you call a new age NFL defensive player. Some teams better than others at developing these guys, but they want to kind of use him as a hybrid. They'll try to rush with him.
Looks like a Jaron Curse to
cover
me.
With him. Yes. Yes. In fact, in his future, he'll be calling the plays. Jaron sometimes has the little mic up in his helmet or whatever. I could see DeMarvian. So he's an interesting draft pick. Their first two draft picks, first round, second round, both developmental guys. Both guys. One guy they're trying to get a new plan together to become a pass rusher. The tight end doesn't have a ton of production, but they see some upside. And the one thing I'll give them benefit of the doubt on tight end, Ed, they've kind of taken some tight ends that are drafted later or undrafted, and they've created some pretty good players from that bunch. So you kind of they've done a pretty nice job developing tight ends. So hopefully they'll have some success with Schoonmaker. Deuce, my opinion on him, he is tiny, but he's built like a rock. I mean, he's extremely he is, and I've heard this about him, and I'd never really been around him. Because I knew a bunch of high school teams that played against him. I kind of have followed him for a long time. I think he's going to be more durable than people think, even though he really is like 5'5 or 5'6. I find it very cool that he and Sproles have developed such a kinship.
Darren Sproles.
Yeah, Darren Sproles. They both played at Kansas State a decade or 15 years apart. And really, it seems like he's going to be not just kind of almost Spud Webb. You remember how fans love
he's
Spud?
He's a mismatch player.
He is a mismatch player, but he's also I think he's going to have this unbelievable personality, and the fans are going to fall in love with him. And I do think there is something to the Tarik Cohen or whatever that can get behind the lineman and just kind of dance around and hide behind him. I think if they use him properly, he could be extremely effective.
I think the one difference between him and Darren Sproles, right? He's not really a return guy like Sproles was.
I think he could be. I think he better be.
If he wants to be on the game day roster, assuming he makes the team at all, and I certainly think Will McClay expects him to make the team. If you listen to how effusive he was in his praise of him, said he was the highest rated player on the board at the time, that they didn't take him, you know, because his father Chris works in the scouting department. In fact, he recused himself from all discussions of grading the running backs. Yeah, I do think they like him a lot. I did want to share my last thing will be I did talk to two head coaches who come from defensive backgrounds about Mozzie Smith. And the first one said, described him as a big athletic guy, stout in a run game, called him an immovable object, and said kind of like Dan Quinn does, he has good growth potential as a rusher. He said, we liked him. Another defensive-oriented head coach said, love Mozzie. He's a two-down nose tackle, very stout against the run, limited pass rush ability. Mm. So I think they've got to get something out of him pass rush-wise. But as you heard when we spoke to Will McClay, if you're going to trust – if Dan Quinn says, I see pass rush potential in this guy, I think Dan Quinn, you trust his judgment on that type of thing. And then the last guy I wanted to talk about is a tight end, Schoonmaker. So there were a lot of people who thought the Bills traded directly in front of the Cowboys in the first round for Dalton Kincaid because the Cowboys, Brandon Bean, the GM, thought that Buffalo had to get in front of Dallas to take him because Dallas was going to pick him, which the Cowboys say that's not true at all. And I talked to somebody in the Buffalo organization and asked him about the two players, and they described Kincaid as being an elite speed and hands route running guy, you know, real instinctive type of player, above average run after the catch. The negative on him was he was limited as a blocker. And Schoonmaker, as you heard Will McClay say, more of a traditional inline tight end, solid blocker, good hands, good size over the middle in the red zone. The negative, he lacks speed and quickness at the top of the route to separate. Better against zone than man. A good overall player who can play three downs, just not a mismatch player in the passing game. And then it was interesting to me that the Cowboys have really, you know, Dak's really been reliant on the tight end position, Dalton Schultz in particular, but the Cowboys have the second most touchdown passes to tight ends in the NFL over the last 2 years. And they led the NFL in touchdowns scored and third downs converted when having three tight ends on the field at the same time. So I think this second round pick is going to have to be, you know, making an immediate contribution as much as the Cowboys like Jake Ferguson.
Well, the fact that the Cowboys are going to turn back the clock and run the ball 60% of the time, you just need blocking tight ends.
Well, last year they ran it 45% of the time by design. Mike McCarthy's teams had never run the ball in his 16 years as the head coach in the NFL. Last year, running it 45% of the time was by far the most he's ever had as a head coach. And it's the only time his teams have ever ranked in the top 10. All those years in Green Bay when he had, as you mentioned, Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre before that, he talked about being balanced on offense, but he never was. He always played through the quarterback. I think we're seeing a different approach here, and it started really last year.
Yeah, I think that is right. It was a good camp. I thought you performed well. Did you put any sunscreen on? I guess we stayed
absolutely
in the shade quite a bit.
I still did put sunscreen on.
I did put some on myself that I was free sunscreen. I was given at the Nelson yesterday, and but it was a good. It was nice to see everybody out there. Everybody, it was good to come in.
Everybody
today.
Except Mike McCarthy.
Everybody except McCarthy. Good to see all the TV guys. The TV cameras were out there. I noticed none of the anchors were. Did you notice not a single TV reporter was out there, but all their camera guys were there.
You know, I saw Mike Ducey at the Babe Laufenberg Coffee with Celebrities the other day, and Roger Staubach was there, and Troy Aikman was there. But yeah, Mike Ducey was there.
He was at that.
He was at that. But when you go outside and it's 85 degrees or higher, you're not going to find Mike Ducey out there.
No, Ducey is a man who does love staying indoors in these months as we get closer to June. It is the Doomsday Podcast, our post-draft special. We promised you this at the time, Ed. I don't think we knew the rookie camp would be
so far down the road.
We
deliver on that.
We did. Yeah,
we make promises all the time that we never think are going to happen.
This one we did make it happen. Thank you to Mark Frito Friedman
coming in on a Saturday.
Yeah, after having a big photo shoot this morning, looks really nice. Has a vest on. And a beautiful button down. It is 89 or 90, and he's all layered up. But tremendous outpouring of. I just think this is going to. Everybody was asking about this. Here is your show. Here is your post draft show. We'll have much more in the off season. Ed, I appreciate it. And wherever your travels, wherever your next celebrity coffee or golf is, hope you have a great time. Appreciate you, buddy.
Maybe it'll just be Jersey Mike's, where some fantasy football players recognize us.
And thank you for that too.
Yeah.
And introducing me, I never knew about the mini option. Okay.
So you thought you had to go regular?
I just kind of get the big old huge option, but the mini option is a and then Ed, oh, by the way, Frito, you'll like this. Ed today had the option, and because he does his Jersey Mike's points, they said, "You have a free mini, Mr. Werder. Would you like to take your free sandwich?" To which my answer would always be, "Yes, give me the free sandwich." Ed refused the free sandwich, thinking that I would tell people that he offered to buy my meal.
I bought him a free lunch.
And then got a free sandwich. So anyway, I hope you use it at some point.
I'll let Joe Biden give you your free lunches.
Oh, goodness. I don't think he's handing out a lot of those. All right. It is the Doomsday Podcast. Mosley, Werder, Frito. Good night, everyone, from far North Dallas.
At Vanguard, you're more than just an investor. You're an owner. That means your priorities are Vanguard's too. So whether you're planning for retirement or trying to save up for your next big adventure, Vanguard will work alongside you to set personalized investment goals. That's the value of ownership. All investing is subject to risk. Vanguard is owned by its funds, which are owned by Vanguard's fund shareholder clients. Vanguard Marketing Corporation Distributor.
Hey, it's Mark Goodman.
And I'm Alan Light.
On today's podcast, Record Store Day founder Carrie Colleton is joining us to discuss the April 20th RSD special releases.
Plus, we'll talk live with our audience, the Sound Up Pod Squad, and find out who still listens to vinyl. And some updates from the Beatles universe.
Oh, good. Sound Up with Mark Goodman and Alan Light, the only music podcast that matters. Get it on Pandora, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.